VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today. It's going to be a shocker of a broadcast as you learn what is taking place in a home and before a parent right now in which the circumstances ought to make the hair on the back of your neck stand out straight. Suppose one day you arrived home and you learned that you no longer had authority over your minor teenager. Unbeknownst to you, your son here in this particular case received advice from a legal aid group on how to become emancipated. No court hearings, no opportunity to be a part of the legal process. Now no access to school records, no access to medical records, no right any longer as a parent. And then you find out that your child was receiving, without your permission or even your knowledge, hormone treatments in order to transition from male to female. Would you be shocked? Would you wonder how such legal action could take place and you not even know it? Well, such is the case with a mom in Minnesota who's now petitioning the United States Supreme Court in order to have her day in court and to prevent what happened to her from happening to countless other families as well. Our guest today calls it a parent's worst nightmare. Today we're speaking with the attorney representing this mom. We welcome to Crosstalk Eric Cardall. He is the special counsel with the Thomas More Law Firm. He graduated from Harvard and the University of Chicago Law School, served around 10 years as an officer in the Illinois Army National Guard, U.S. Army Reserves, and Minnesota Army National Guard before retiring as captain. He's on the advisory board member of the Minnesota chapter of the Federalist Society and representing this mom, Anne Marie Calgaro. And Eric, we'd like to welcome you here to Crosstalk.
It's a real privilege. Thank you.
You are right now in the process of petitioning the United States Supreme Court, but I'd like us to track what has gotten us to this point, and I've given kind of a brief synopsis, Eric, but let's start at the beginning. Tell us about Anne Marie Calgaro and the situation that's unfolded regarding her son. Take us back to the beginning as we know the story.
Well, your introduction is a good one, Anne Marie Calgaro had to discover what was going on with her kid in a backward way, even though, you know, bureaucrats at the county and the agency and the school district all knew what they were doing. And it took a long time for her to figure out that her child, 15-year-old, had gotten a letter from the legal aid clinic saying, without a court order, that is, that the child's emancipated. And then under statutes, the county awarded the welfare payments, the insurance coverage. The medical provider, under statute, saw that, oh, we're going to get paid with the county benefits, so we'll recognize them as emancipated. And finally, the school district did the same. And so through just a letter, not a legal document, but a letter, Anne Marie Calgaro lost control of her child in the welfare area, in the medical area, and in the educational area. And basically, she had her, and I'm not supposed to use this word according to lower courts, she had her parental rights terminated even though she was a fit parent, F-I-T, fit. And we know you can have your rights terminated if you're an unfit parent, you know, child protection services and all that, but it's unheard of to terminate the rights of a fit parent like this without any notice, without any process.
This is all taking place, St. Louis County, Minnesota, and this includes cities like Duluth, Hermantown, Eveleth, Sudan, Virginia, Cook, Minnesota, right where many listeners are right now. Her son, just 15 years old when this all started. Do we know, Eric, how her son got connected to this legal aid group?
No, we're not sure if he solicited them or he's recruited, but we do know that that Anne Marie Calgaro unconditionally loves her child, and that regardless of what decisions he would make, she loves him. And that continued throughout the litigation. And really the dispute was between Anne Marie Calgaro and the government regarding these statutes and policies, mm-hmm. and whether she could lose all her parental rights, that they could end the control of her child without giving her notice and a hearing.
So you said she was never determined to be an unfit parent.
Right, which is critical, and it would be scandalous to suggest otherwise because mm-hmm. she's such a loving mom. She's Christian, she's loving, she lives by biblical principles, and the child knows that. And, you know, the child would acknowledge that. During the litigation, you know, he just kept on winning because the federal courts, in my view, weren't committed enough to parental rights to see the harm being done to the parent-child relationship here.
Yeah. Now, as a matter of fact, she has other children, too.
That's right. She has three additional minor children right now, and part of the lawsuit is litigating it you know, with respect to her minor children, because right now, quite frankly, everyone in Minnesota should be fearful that if their children get access to the county, that they could get welfare benefits without parental notice, as a medical provider, have medical services without parental notice, and then also the same with the school.
Did she ever tell her son, I want no contact with you, don't you ever come home?
Heavens no, she's a Christian mother, and so there's a Christian commitment there, and she wasn't going to abandon him under any circumstances.
So, you know, just hearing this on its face, Eric, I mean, I'm appalled that a minor child could obtain emancipation without parental knowledge or consent. The parent didn't even know, not even notified by a court this was going on, that she could go and give testimony. I mean, is there any court order in this process that granted emancipation to take place?
No, in fact, if the agencies were relying on court order emancipation, of course, we wouldn't have a lawsuit. The thing here is that the statutes authorize the agencies to make these determinations ending parental rights without a court order. And so we're complaining about statutes that authorize agencies to treat minors as adults without a court order of emancipation or, you know, a Child Protection Services court order terminating parental rights.
Now, I understand there are many false claims that were made in even the request for emancipation. Are you familiar with those?
Yes. And I think that the reason why we trust a judge in an emancipation process is that the judge will siphon through the, you know, the good claims and the bad claims. But remember, the judge is determining what's in the best interest of the child. And emancipation could be full, but it also could be partial, it could be temporary, conditional. You can imagine a judge walking the child back, right,
mm-hmm.
and saying, well, maybe some parental input's good. And that's what happens, you know, all every day in the family law court, right? But somehow over here in this area where you don't go to court, you can have your parental rights ended by these bureaucracies under these statutes.
Sir, her side was never presented before those who granted emancipation.
Oh, absolutely not. They weren't interested. In fact, that was the strangest thing about this is that Anne-Marie Calgaro would call the county, she would call the school, she would call the medical providers, and they wouldn't tell her anything because they said they couldn't. So who's making that decision? Remember,
yeah.
Our point of view is a child can't act like an adult, can't make adult decisions. So in the end, you know, the county's making the decision. The medical provider's making the decision. The school district's making the decisions for the child.
Now, we also understand that unbeknown to Anne-Marie Calgaro, her son was receiving hormone treatments in order to transition from male to female, with medical assistance paying for these treatments?
That's right. That was part of the county process. This was government-funded over the objection of a parent. And so remember, you know, under this situation in Minnesota, any 15-year-old could walk out and go tell the county, you know, I want welfare payments, just get set up in an apartment. And then you get the medical insurance coverage, too, that can cover things like sex change, hormonal treatments, and eventually surgery. And so you see how it's all government-funded, and it all undermines the family, at least the proper understanding of family.
I understand, too, that her son was prescribed narcotics.
That's right. And again, that there should be parental involvement when you have that kind of medicine being prescribed.
But all through this legal, this process, not a legal process, I guess, I mean, a statutory process, Eric, she was never consulted in any way through any of this, was she?
That's right. And in fact, we didn't find out about the sex change, gender transitioning medical services until we solicited documents from a judicial court file where the teenager had filed for a name change. And the court rightfully rejected the name change because, according to Minnesota's courts, he wasn't emancipated yet because he didn't have a court order. But in that file, he had submitted the letter from the Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid Clinic and a letter from the two medical service providers indicating that he was emancipated. But
yeah,
the court wasn't buying it because the court's understanding is you're not emancipated until there's a court order. But the statutes say otherwise. The statutes say you can be emancipated without a court order.
So we've got a conflict here between the courts and what the statutes are saying.
That's right. Remember, we weren't a party to the name change process.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just reporting back to you what happened.
Wow.
But with respect to the, and then about words, I mean, you know, I'm saying, you know, the government is kind of interfering mm-hmm. with our conception of community and family, and that what we're fighting back and saying, well, this is effectively, you know, emancipation without a court order. And then the district court says, we can't use the word emancipation. That's for our court process. And then I go to the Court of Appeals and I say, well, these rights were terminated without a court order. And they say, well, you can't say that. That's for unfit parents. So now we're saying, on behalf of fit parents, the due process clause applies if parental rights are ended.
Eric Hardall is our guest here today on Crosstalk, special counsel with the Thomas More Law Firm, and we're discussing a situation of, parental rights under attack. Anne-Marie Calguero is one we're talking about who's being represented here by our guest today. Anne-Marie did turn to the courts. First went to district court. Tell us what happened. I mean, what unfolded there?
Well, for a long time, for months, Anne-Marie consulted with state attorneys. And this is an important point. And the state attorneys told her that she didn't have access to court. Initially, of course, I disagreed with them. And then I discovered that it's true that Minnesota does not have a procedure that once a child is administratively emancipated, like we're talking about, or that parental rights are ended, to restore those rights. So there's no state court procedure for a parent to restore parental rights.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're in federal court. So we went to federal court, and we lost because the court refused to apply the procedural due process clause. That is, there's a due process clause that guarantees a notice and opportunity to be heard before you lose your life, liberty, and property. And here, your parental rights are fundamental rights, and the district court refused to apply that law to this situation. And then the Eighth Circuit affirmed, and we think the problem is there isn't a U.S. Supreme Court law on point. U.S. Supreme Court case on point.
Mm-hmm. So it went from this federal district court then to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and did they not see the conflict in Minnesota's legal statutes here?
But they recognized the issues and decided them against us. But again, the U.S. Supreme Court has not addressed whether the Due Process
right.
Clause, the U.S. Constitution, applies in favor of a parent when parental rights are ended under Minnesota statutes by an agency.
Folks, I understand this. Can you comprehend this? There's an agency that has made determination that emancipation needed to take place for this minor child. It was 15 years old at the time when which this all began. It did not go to a court, did not go before a judge. A judge did not hear what Anne-Marie Calguero as parent had to say regarding this. Rather, this agency made determination that the child's emancipated, and all of a sudden, benefits start kicking in for health care, monies that are taking care of the rent and other needs of the child, school records being denied the parent, medical records being denied, and folks, it's going on, and it's happening today. Back in just 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, over the years, we've read a lot from science about amber. Has DNA ever been recovered from it?
Chris, there are fragments of DNA found in amber, but it's well known that DNA decomposes in such a short period of time that even in thousands of years, you'd not expect to find much DNA left. But now an even more remarkable thing has been found that has thrown evolution into a tizzy. Entombed within the bodies of insects fossilized in amber are ancient bacteria, which scientists have been able to revive. They've actually come back to life. Over 3,500 types of microorganisms have been rejuvenated. Chris, how can this be? This amber is thought to be millions and millions of years old, but how could things still be alive after all that time? Chris, I think it's the evolutionary story and the story of millions of years which is wrong. The back to Genesis view makes a whole lot more sense.
Thanks for tuning in to Back to Genesis.
A Parent's Worst Nightmare. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Our guest today is Eric Cardall, the special counsel with the Thomas Moore Law Firm, representing the interest of Anne-Marie Calgaro, but not just the interest of her, but of parents all across the state of Minnesota. As we're talking about this case, parental rights removed, not before by a court, by administrators, agency administrators who determined that, we're going to terminate her rights. She no longer is the parent, that the child's emancipated. We're going to care for all his needs as a minor. As a result, this went up, state courts didn't handle it, went to the district court and then to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. We're talking today with Eric Cardall, who is representing her now. And Eric, just last week, you approached the United States Supreme Court. Tell us about it.
That's right. This is a petition that we're filing to the U.S. Supreme Court. I had one granted last year, a First Amendment case, and one previously in my career, so I'm hoping, this will be my third one. And the goal here with the petition is to present the case to the U.S. Supreme Court and show that there's a question that was settled by the U.S. Court of Appeals that's very important, but should be resolved by the U.S. Supreme Court. And so the issue is, for all three subject areas, welfare, medical, and educational, when a third party here, the government agencies, is terminating parental rights, does the parent have right to notice an opportunity to be heard? And normally, like we mentioned with the court of emancipation, the parent has plenty of rights to be heard. Mm-hmm. But here you have bureaucrats in each area making the decision.
So we're really looking at the parental rights aspect of this as it's going before the court. I mean, the whole matter of giving the medications and the hormone blockers and all that sort of thing, that's kind of a secondary issue even to this primary issue of parental rights.
That's correct, but it's also important to underline that is a huge life-changing approach, hormonal treatments and the surgery and all that. But remember, that's still elective, and it's still non-emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for the audience to understand that the interference with the parents' rights here involved elective, non-emergency medical procedures. I mean, you can imagine an emergency room, we'd all say, well, you can't wait for the parent to say yes.
Right.
But here, I mean, these sort of treatments are planned over months and over years. And so why wouldn't you want parental input? After all, the parental input is good because the parent knows the child. A medical provider doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know the United States Supreme Court has review sessions to determine what cases are going to accept or not accept. Do we know when that review session will take place before the U.S. Supreme Court?
That's right. They're in summer recess. Remember, there's a flurry of decisions before June 30th. So they'll sit down and look at the petitions filed over the summer, the first week of October.
Okay.
And then we'll find out.
Yeah, and matter of fact, one of the first cases, they've got a trio of cases that even deal with the transgender issue and sexual identity and so forth at the very start of their season. But this issue of parental rights, it's critical because what you said in our first segment here, Eric, is there's not something, a Supreme Court precedent to rely upon for this.
Well, that's right. And the closest we have is the 2000 decision, last important parental rights case by the U.S. Supreme Court. But that was coming out of a court proceeding where the Washington State Court had said that the court can't grant the grandparent more visitation rights than the parent wants because the parent's fit. When the parent's fit, then we presume that the parent's decisions are the best for the child. And so that was a situation with Calgaro because she's never been involved with the Child Protection Services proceeding. Mm-hmm. She's never had any allegations of that type. So you have a fit parent losing all her rights without notice.
Yes.
And really, the government is operating with a much different sense of what family is. I think the government thinks they own the children. That's why the government passes these kind of statutes.
Right. That's right.
But that's foreign to the U.S. Constitution and its tradition as laid out by the courts.
Yeah.
But again, even with that being said, we have to fight because the U.S. Supreme Court has never been put in the position to answer this legal question.
It sounds more like the U.N. Convention on the Rights of the Child, government knows best, the society knows best, you as parents, you're secondary. Her son, Anne-Marie's son, has since turned 18. He's no longer a minor, and some might argue, well, that makes her case null and void. What's your response to that?
Well, there's several responses. First of all, Anne-Marie's been damaged. I mean, if she had gotten notice, this would have been a lot easier and a lot less expensive. She never got notice, right, even after the fact that her rights had been deprived. And then secondly, because there are facial claims to the statutes, the claims survive her as-applied claims. And further, she's doing it because she's concerned about her three children. I mean, I hope my children aren't listening to the show because I have 8 children, 4 teenagers, and I really don't want them to know that they can go to the county and say, I want to live independently for my mom and dad. Okay, here's your check for the welfare payments. You can live in an apartment. You see how that's an attack on the family?
Yes.
I don't want my children to get welfare payments while they're teenagers. I don't want them to live apart from me. I want them to live with me and work with me to accomplish the common goals. And it's just a breach of the family when the government says, well, if a teenager walks in here and wants to be free from their parents, we'll give them the welfare payments. That's just wrong.
Hmm. I'm taking it then by what you said. This is all of Minnesota. This is not limited to St. Louis County, Minnesota. Is that correct?
That's right. And I think really what's going on here is that Minnesota, there's a lot of commitment to family here. You go to the parks, there are people still picnicking, having a good time, you know, throwing the frisbee, barbecuing, whatever. And then the government has a much different view of the family. So some people want to lower the age of emancipation from 18 in Minnesota to 17, 16, 15, also the age of consent for sex, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side says, no, and they're finding it very difficult to do that. So they can't lower that age, but they can make all these exceptions, which for all intents and purposes, get rid of that age anyway, right, because the exceptions swallow the rule.
Is Minnesota as a state alone in this, or is this cropping up in other states as well?
Yeah, attorneys have called me from all over the place, Massachusetts, New Jersey, California, and these exceptions where bureaucracies are terminating parental rights by subject area are fairly common, particularly in the medical service provider area.
That's both frightening and alarming.
It's horrific. Like I said, I have 8 children. I can't believe that I wouldn't be able to get some medical records of my children.
Yeah.
My children didn't want me to.
Or school records.
Or know about the county welfare payments.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't it the right to parent? Isn't that protected from government interference?
Well, it is. It is for. It's a great question. You know, once the government has an allegation the parent's unfit, then we justify, you know, some interference in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely, if the parent's fit. There's a U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit decision interpreting the case I mentioned before, the grandparent case, Troxell, that actually says if it's a fit parent, the government has no business interfering in the parent-child relationship. And that's the type of case law precedent we're relying on. And that is, if it's a fit parent, government buzz off. You can't give welfare payments to a teenager unless the parent consents.
That's
the way it works.
Has there been any attempt to deal with this legislatively? Have legislative leaders been contacted to change the laws that exist in the state of Minnesota?
Yes, particularly there have been efforts left and right to codify, to make into statute our common law emancipation process. These bills have been sponsored by Democrats and Republicans but never been passed. And, you know, that could clear a lot of this up by simply saying that, you know, a child cannot be treated as emancipated unless they have a quarter of emancipation. But right now the statutes say otherwise.
If the U.S. Supreme Court, the justices, a majority of them, or I believe it's 4 that would have to make determination to take the case, if they refuse this case, what are the implications?
Well, then we're back to the drawing board, and we'll have to keep defending people as we can. But it would be a disaster for Minnesota because these parents of these children will be losing their parental rights without knowing it, and that's what the Due Process Clause I thought was for.
And what a message this sends to teenage kids, too.
Oh, right. And again, the idea is that these people can't lower the age of adulthood. And so the people who want these kind of changes look for these exceptions, and they're trying to spring children from their parents' control. For what end? Well, they'll have to explain that to you.
Well, friends, we want to make you aware of this case because it has been petitioned now to the United States Supreme Court, who will be making determination in the somewhat near future as it relates to whether to pick up this case or not. And one of the things you can do at this time, certainly, is to be praying that the justices would indeed accept this case for the review. That matter of intense prayer on this issue, and also I think it would behoove people, Eric, to find out what's going on in their own state on this issue, and if they need to take action in following through on this, independently state by state, at least there's a groundswell of activity that can happen to change what the existing law is.
That's right, and the Thomas More Society can be a valuable resource. And one of the things that you have to remember is that there's a lot of attention to these notice requirements regarding abortion, and there's a lot of legislation regarding, what happens when a child has sexually transmitted diseases, should that be reported to the parent, whatever. Now we're to the point where on the medical services, they've gotten to the point where parental consent is not required for elective, non-emergency procedures. And so you see the creeping.
Yes.
And so people just, I think, aren't aware of the fact that the other side is drafting these statutes to free teenagers from parental control. And we need to point that out wherever it comes up.
Yeah, and I think that's very important because, I mean, many parents say, oh, yeah, I have to sign this consent form for the school to give my child Tylenol if they have a headache or something else that happens at school. And they naturally would think, well, certainly they're not going to give hormone treatments to my child without my knowledge or consent. But that's exactly what has taken place.
Right, and I think that the progressives, they keep wanting to push the law, create these exceptions so that they can win on the big issue. So they're going step by step, brick by brick, to lower the age of adulthood and the age of consent to sexual relations. And so it's all out there, right? And they're fighting this way. And I think we have to resist in any way we can. And one way is to appeal to the U.S. Constitution and the fact that it protects parental rights.
Now, you've written about this. There's a write-up on your website. Tell us about the site there.
ThomasMoreSociety.org is the organization's website, and they're doing a nice job of explaining the case and its developments. And basically, the focus there is on the life issues, family life, and the things that your listeners would be interested in.
Again, that's ThomasMoreSociety.org. Moore is M-O-R-E, ThomasMoreSociety.org. And you'll find it there prominent on their homepage, information about this very case dealing with the Anne-Marie Calguero and the termination of her parental rights, never deemed to be an unfit parent, yet her rights have been taken away. Let's open our phone lines here today on Crosstalk. Our number, 800-733-9829. Maybe you've got a question that has been provoked by our discussion today. Maybe you'd like to comment on this issue. Our number here, 800-733-9829. Pick up your phone, folks. This is outrageous in my book. What are your thoughts on it? 800-733-9829. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Relationships have been shattered due to lack of forgiveness. It's impacted marriages, parents and children, siblings, and even church families as a whole. Some have said that forgiveness is the most difficult commandment we are given as Christians. Why is that? Perhaps it is because it strikes at the core of our pride that says we deserve better than we are getting. Perhaps it seems if we forgive, we are letting that person win in a situation that hurts us in some way. In the book, Forgiven People Forgive, Pastor Jeff Miller shows us where the rubber meets the road. At the heart of why we should forgive is the fact that God has forgiven us and we are commanded to forgive. It's easy for bitterness to take root in a heart that is unforgiving. Forgiven People Forgive is available for a donation of $6 or more to VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829. Ask for Forgiven People Forgive. 1-800-729-9829.
friends, I hope you're putting yourselves in the shoes of Anne-Marie Calguero, who all of a sudden learned that she no longer had parental rights for her minor child. Not deemed an unfit parent, never hauled off to the courts, and all of a sudden somebody made this determination to emancipate her children. Your reaction to the issue today, maybe a question that is prompted in your mind, our number is 800-733-9829. Eric Cardall is our guest today, special counsel with the Thomas More Law Firm, who last week sent a petition to the U.S. Supreme Court to review this case, to take this case, to hear the merits of their argument that challenges what has taken place in Minnesota. But not only in Minnesota, it'll impact states across this nation. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Sharon calling in from Union Grove, Wisconsin. Sharon, you're on the air.
Hi, God bless you all. My question is, how is it that it's a woman's right to terminate her baby even when it's born, but then when a child gets a certain age, all of a sudden they have no rights anymore? Mm. I'll take your answer, your comments off this. Thank you.
Yeah, we keep hearing about a woman's right in that regard, parental rights, so to speak. But all of a sudden, there's a switch that flips, and no longer you have those rights.
Right, and it's a crazy thing because the people, and people in Wisconsin, people in Minnesota, people all over the nation, they have a view of family, which is really rooted in that paternal relationship, parent child, child to parent, and that's sort of our reality. But my experience in these cases, not only this case involving a fit parent, but also cases that where there are allegations of a parent being unfit, the government has a much different perspective. The statutes drive this idea that the children are owned by the government and that they are sort of like a privilege, not a right, to be a parent. And this has to be corrected because we want the government to reinforce the family relations, not to destroy them. And so what's so odd about this case, of course, is that an unfit parent, in order to have the parental rights terminated, usually gets about a year of court proceedings, due process, plenty of opportunities to recant or whatever. But there's a year of court proceedings before the parental rights are terminated. Here, Anne-Marie Calguero, she's a fit parent, and she just loses them without any notice, mm-hmm. without any court procedures. And so you see how it's related is that we have to defend fit parents' rights, and we also want to defend people's rights who have allegations of unfitness, because those procedures have to be fair, because we don't want the government raising all these children if it's not necessary.
Our number to crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Let's go next to Pasco, Washington. Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering if you would be able to look to Pierce versus Society of Sisters, 1925, for any help in this case where the government recognized as a fundamental right the right of parents to direct both the education and the upbringing of their children. Is this not the issues of medical decisions, is that not part of the upbringing of children?
That's exactly right, and we cited that case in our brief for a number of reasons. That one, and also the idea that in that case, the state had made public school education compulsory. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, you can't do that over a parent's objection. So look how odd this is with a 15-year-old getting control of educational decisions. It's really the public school principal who's making the decisions, right? And we already went through this in 1925 with Pierce v. Society of Sisters. So we are on the right side of that issue and the right side of that case, and we cited it in our brief.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Washington, let's go to West Virginia. Bridgeport, West Virginia. Al, you're on the air.
Hi, Brother Jim. Thanks for taking my call. I'd say with the sister who called the very first caller, she had a really good point. She brought that up. That was really, really, really deep point. But, Brother Eric, a while back, I flip around, and there was a commentator on the MSNBC that said, our kids don't belong to us, they belong to our communities. And really, it just reminds me of something pretty bad that happened in the 30s, pal, and I don't want to mention it, but it's really going down that road.
Yeah. Thank you, Al. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, it you know, it's all the same stuff. I mean, it's all the same dark stuff. And I just think that this case highlights that if the other side and we are going to cooperate democratically on this age of adulthood, they have to play fair and go through the state legislature and lower the age from 18 to 15 or 12 or whatever they want. That they can't use these exceptions to accomplish it, you know, sort of in this indirect way because unconstitutional. And that's why we need the federal courts to have the backbone to take the case and say, look, you can't do it this way, but you can do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Our number 800-733-9829, Maria from West Allis, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. 25 years ago when my daughter was in high school, she was 16 years old, I actually found some birth control pills in her drawer, and when I confronted her with this, she told me she got them at school. This has been going on for a long, long time, slowly trying to take over our children. I mean, I was never notified that they had done this. I went to school, and I talked with the nurse there, and I told her, why are you giving my daughter birth control pills? And she says, well, we do that to the kids here. I said, yeah, but I need to be notified. And she just looked at me and didn't say a word. So this is all was coming. It's now it's reached its peak. And I believe that at some point they're going to do like they do in communist China, take over the kids. So That's my comment. I'll hang up and listen to you on the air.
Thank you, Maria. Erica, truly, as she said, this has been on the works for some time.
Well, no, you're right, and she's right, because the government has been asserting control over the children in many ways, but with respect to birth control, abortion, sexually transmitted diseases, they've been looking for exceptions to parental rights, justifications, and the exceptions are growing and growing to undermine this idea that children are basically children of their parents rather than children of the government. And so one way for the lady to consider the case is that since we found something the federal courts haven't done yet, and that is determine whether the Due Process Clause applies when parental control is ended by these bureaucrats under the state statutes, that if this case is taken, then what happens is if we win, that's a watershed moment because, of course, all those other requirements that we're talking about regarding abortion and regarding birth control and so forth can be reexamined constitutionally. You need the first case, right, to establish the principle the Due Process Clause applies when parental rights are ended for fit parents, and then we can examine all of this stuff. Because, of course, in important decisions like birth control, important decisions like abortion, parents should be, not only should parental input be valued, but parental consent should be required.
We have a couple open lines here at 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Let's go to Anna next, calling in from Exonia. You're on the air, Anna.
Hi, I praise the Lord for you. And that's Watertown, but that's okay. We're pretty close to Exonia.
Okay.
I praise the Lord for you, and yes, the liberality of the state. When I found out how liberal Minnesota was when it came to euthanizing, my dad is not saved, and he was going to have my mother euthanized when she was incapacitated. And I'm going, are you serious? And it goes right along hand in hand with government taking over families and us allowing it. And, you know, it's our fault for allowing the Lord, for not standing up for our rights as Christians in our public anywhere. Thank you. God bless. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. And that really brings an interesting point here, Eric, because we know in other cases we have situations taking place where hospitals are making decision, no, we're going to stop medical treatment, even though other hospitals say, hey, we can help this person. Texas has this 10-day rule, for instance. If they give 10 days notice, they can go ahead and pull all the mechanism of what they would consider life-saving equipment and so forth. Could a case like what you put before the Supreme Court have an impact on other issues as well?
Well, absolutely. Again, it reflects a sort of a traditional view of the Constitution, and that is the view that the Constitution is there to protect people from overreaching government actions. And to the extent the medical providers are relying on statutes, like in this case, to euthanize, absolutely. In many cases, they are. And so this idea of Christians stepping forward and saying, look, you know, we can look at the Constitution and we can see that the Constitution protects the rights of parents and protects the rights of people, really, against overreaching government action. It's a very good thing to do. But we do need people to stand up, like the caller suggested, because there's a lot of work to do because we've let the government get out of control. By the way, with respect to the government control of children, part of what's driving it, like George Gilder's point, there's money in poverty. Well, there's money in all these programs, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you have children being taken care of by the government, it's going to be very expensive. A lot more expensive than the parents taking care of the children because they're willing to do it for free.
Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. I believe it's important, Eric, for us to point out what criteria was utilized by these agencies to determine emancipation.
Well, what happened in the case was basically the county, the medical providers, and the school district just took the letter from the legal aid clinic and accepted it. And that letter was one-sided. It just showed the child's point of view. And then, secondly, it wasn't reflected in any investigation regarding the parent, Emery Calgaro. And, you know, like they never talked to me about it. And so that was what's so disheartening about how the county, the medical providers, and the school district operated. They never talked to the parent or the parent's attorney or anyone. They just did it. They wouldn't even tell us they did it. They ended her parental control.
It's just, again, it's just mind-blowing that they would do such a thing without even consulting the parent, how they can make determination without even, how many times stories are made up and untruths being told, and for them not even to give examination by hearing both sides of the issue.
That's right. And remember, it's kind of like a lot of, when I've been a parent for a bunch of teenagers, I think I have four now, but the child always thinks that, when we're disciplining the parent, those are like unwanted words, right? They're difficult. If they could just leave the house, go to the county, and get welfare payments for an apartment and medical insurance, they just might. part of being a parent to a teenager is kind of helping them stand up, and sometimes you have to be a little stern with them and discipline them, and that's not pleasant, right? But they shouldn't have an escape hatch of running to the county. It undermines the whole parental-child relationship if the government's going to be willing to fund teenagers in apartments with medical care and all that.
We're just a few seconds from the break, so we'll pick up our next callers right after the break. With us today is Eric Cardall, the special counsel with Thomas More Law Firm, as he's representing Anne-Marie Calgaro. And, folks, this matter has been petitioned to the U.S. Supreme Court to accept the case. They are on a recess right now. They finished their term the end of June. They come back in October. And certainly be praying that they indeed would accept this case. It needs review. Change needs to happen. We'll be back in 1 minute with more of your calls here on Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brennan House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Anti-Semitism is rising. That's provable. In fact, many secular websites and many secular news agencies are reporting on the incredible rise of anti-Semitism, not only in Europe, but also in America. In fact, now we have members of Congress, one of them, Omar, from Minnesota, from Somalia, who declares the most racist comments about the Jews one could ever read, and yet has the unmitigated gall to turn around and declare that we, Americans, are the racist. Why? Because we believe in national sovereignty, borders, vetting people from known terrorist organizations and states and nations. And yet, this is exactly the playbook of the cultural Marxist that I've been warning about for years. More details can be found in 1 hour free docu-movie, SabotageTheMovie.com. For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brennan House.
Mm-hmm. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Eric Cardall is with us here today, special counsel with the Thomas More Law Firm. Again, you can read more on this at thomasmoresociety.org, thomasmoresociety.org. Let's go back to the phone lines. Ron is calling in from Arizona. Ron, you're on the air.
Hi, Mr. Snyder. Thank you for taking my call, and Mr. Cardall.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening. I just feel compelled to think about the fact that this all started with the brother and the demonic influences of homosexuality and the persuasions for him to rebel and cause division in that family, and somehow the government sided with all this sympathy towards him, and the daughter just got on the bandwagon, and I think this is where this is all stemming from. And if there was ever a precedent set by that young lady that talked that young man into, I forget their names, into going ahead with his suicide, and then they ended up convicting her because they held her responsible for him eventually carrying through with the act of committing suicide. Isn't there some kind of parallel between the government aiding and abetting and allowing this woman's daughter to, in a sense, be abandoned?
Eric, are you familiar with this other situation?
Well, enough that I can comment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's of course there are moral parallels, and from that frame of reference, I'm trained to look at government action and determine whether the government, is, violating the law or, in this case, serially violating the law. And so that's my training, and so I'm a Christian bringing my values to this job, and my job is to point out when the government has serially violated the law. And here, Minnesota has been very naughty, because it's violated the Constitution in three ways. One is through the county, the welfare benefits insurance. Two, the medical providers, cutting out the parents when there's non-emergency elective procedures. And then third, with respect to the school district, cutting off parental input on educational choices for the minor. And so you see, we can work together as Christians and make this a better country, but we don't have to turn everything into a moral question, although, of course, all our views are undermined by moral understanding. And so, yes, my moral understanding would be consistent with your audience, and here what we're doing is we're saying, look, I mean, there's a tradition in the Constitution of honoring parental rights, and Minnesota has been very naughty in being a serial violator of those rights.
Yeah. Thank you, Ron, for the call. From Arizona, let's go to Ohio next. Lee, you're on the air.
Hi. First it was Christine Pelletero when the Boston hospital stole her from her parents, and now this case. Are we not on the verge of a modern civil war because the government keeps intruding on parental rights?
Oh, no, absolutely. It's a nonviolent one, but there is the government, as I mentioned before, the government is setting up to spend and is spending, hundreds of millions of dollars interfering with families. And what we have to fight back is that money not be spent when there are fit parents involved.
Yeah.
And so this whole mechanism's out there. All these agencies are ready to take care of your kids. And we need to make sure that they can't do that lawfully.
Yeah.
And this is not to say that unfit parents shouldn't be have their rights terminated, but those cases have to be looked at very carefully. But they're moving in a different direction. They're going after the children of fit parents. That's got to stop.
Thank you, Lee, for the call. Let's go to Abigail next from Wisconsin Dells. And Abigail, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you so much for being on the air. My mother listens to you every day, but I just I wanted to say that it's just incredible what's going on in America right now. I mean, like, when my mother was a kid, none of this was ever happening or mm-hmm. even thought of happening, and it just horrifies the thought that, like, my father is he's always nervous that something could happen to split up our family. And we just need to stay strong in the Lord. And I wanted to ask you, is Wisconsin affected yet?
Okay, two things. Abigail, could you first of all tell us how old you are?
I'm 13.
13, wow. Thank you so much for listening and calling. This Erica, she's got some legitimate concerns here. Her parents are concerned. She's 13 years old. What might happen within our family? Concerned as to where things are going today. So that's one aspect. Second aspect, she's saying, is Wisconsin at risk for this as well?
Yeah, my understanding is that with respect to these exceptions to parental rights regarding medical care, they're all over the place. We haven't found a state that does welfare payments like Minnesota, where teenagers can just self-report emancipation without a court order and get the welfare payments. But yeah, it's a concern, as I mentioned, nationwide. I think that the big thing about families dividing is that something like in Minnesota, the welfare county payments, you can see how that would divide a family.
Mm-hmm.
Like the older child goes for the welfare payments at 15, and then he's arguing that the other children should get the welfare payments too, and the parents are saying, no, don't follow his example. By the government offering the money to a child with a fit parent, there's all these problems that arise, and I think that would happen in Wisconsin too. But as far as I know, there are exceptions to parental rights in the medical area in Wisconsin as well.
Thank you, Abigail, for your call and for your concern today.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Very interesting concern from the heart of a teenager. Eric, we're down to just half a minute. What would you like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I think prayer is really important, mm-hmm. like you had mentioned, but I think the big thing is that, that Christians can make a difference if they stand up for themselves, their parental rights, their other rights, and there are lawyers who want to help, and the lawyers at ThomasMoreSociety.org want to help. So if another parental right case comes up, please give us a call.
Eric, thank you for being with us today, and we're going to ask that our listeners be praying for you as well, and in particular as you represent Anne Marie in this case before the U.S. Supreme Court. Thank you, Eric, for being with us.
Thank you.
Eric Cardall, our guest here today. Again, the website, ThomasMoreSociety.org. ThomasMoreSociety.org. And Eric, if you would, just stay on the line here for a moment. Friends, this case is before us right now, and the U.S. Supreme Court making determination whether to accept this. Would you join us in prayer that indeed they would? Many, many families' well-being is dependent on it.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.